The Spectator magazine is home to wonderful writing, insightful analysis, and unrivaled books and arts reviews. Subscribe today for just £12 and receive a 12-week subscription in print and online, along with a free £20 John Lewis or Waitrose voucher. Go to spectator.co.uk/voucher.
Hello and welcome to Coffee House Shots. I'm James Heal and I'm joined today by Katie Balls and Fraser Nelson. Now, Katie, over the weekend, Iran attacked Israel, and in response to that, Lord Cameron has been out on the airwaves today explaining the UK's reaction. Tell us all about that.
Yes, as you say, this is all in response to Iran's attack. Ultimately, despite launching a mix of drones and missiles, around 300, there was not much damage inflicted at all. They were all really intercepted by Israel's Iron Dome or by the partners that came in. So Jordan, the UK, the US, rumours of Saudi Arabia unconfirmed, but effectively it stopped any real damage being caused. And then you now have the Iranians and the Iranian government saying, well, job done, we're not planning to go any further. Stand down, World War III is not about to happen yet. But of course, because Israel have said that they will respond to it and they will get revenge for this, it's now really on what is Israel going to do. And you can see that in David Cameron's press media round this morning, his first proper morning round since becoming foreign secretary, in which he was talking about, you know, how much he respects Israel's right to self-defense, but also please don't go there and do something which would antagonize and further escalate the situation. And I think those words are being echoed across G7 countries, which is calling for Israel to step back rather than do something that enters a new chapter. Now, in terms of what could happen, David Cameron was saying, you know, it's time to think with heads, not hearts, when it comes to what the Israeli government should do. But of course, given the Israeli government said they were active in 48 hours, we're heading to, you know, an important 24 hours and they are going to go good on their word. But there are different levels of responses they can have. If they were to launch something into Iranian territory, that's clearly more of an escalation than going for a proxy in one of the neighboring countries, and of course what they would choose to strike in Iran. So I think we're seeing attempts at diplomacy to stop them, but it's not quite clear that it's going to go. And I think if Israel do something, you'll quite quickly have David Cameron accused of, or the UK government, others accused of, allowing Israel to behave in other circumstances and go too far, and therefore emboldening them.
Now, talking of former prime ministers, this week Liz Truss has got a new book out, first since leaving office. Fraser, you've got the first TV interview with her. We can hear a section of that here now.
Liz, welcome and thank you for joining me on Spectator.
Great to be here.
Now, you mentioned the mini budget. Did you ask yourself, is this politically deliverable?
Yes.
Yes, I did. Was?
Yes. Well, I don't think it's true that I uprooted the economic architecture.
You suspended the OBR, you'd sacked the permanent secretary of the Treasury.
The OBR weren't consulted about furlough announcements. They weren't consulted about public spending announcements. And there were no complaints at the time.
Did you know that your Chancellor was going to promise even more tax cuts?
No.
What did you think when you heard that?
Well, I don't think it was particularly helpful, Fraser.
You also speak in the book about the effect on your family that being a number 10 had.
I was talking to my daughter this morning. She said nothing about this is normal.
Your own husband here warned you this would end in tears.
Yeah, he did. He
didn't listen.
No.
Opinion has been split in immigration amongst conservatives. In your book, you talk about it as a problem. Have you always believed that the figures were too high?
I agreed with Suella that we needed to reduce them. We've seen the judiciary significantly empowered by Blair's changes to the constitution. Take the Rwanda policy. It's not deliverable because the courts have stopped it.
So if the courts stop it, it's not deliverable. I mean, you can't wish for a world where the courts don't have these power.
I can wish for a world where the Supreme Court no longer exists. I can. I believe, like you, Fraser, it was possible to change things within the system. And now I'm convinced that the system itself has to change.
So tell us, what was the interview about and what you really focused on during your chat?
I am fascinated by Liz Truss's 49 days which shook the world, of which, James, you're an esteemed biographer. And a lot of people would think, oh, she's mad, it doesn't matter what she's got to say. But this is an unusual memoir. It's very honest. It tells you things from her perspective. I disagree with about half of it, but I think if you want to understand the way the British politics works or doesn't, if you understand what motivates the people who end up in number 10 and try to get there as well, then you need to read books like this. And they can be sometimes really boring tracts of self-exculpation, as Tony Blair's was, or they can be kind of raw warts and all, as Liz Truss's is. And that's why I do think that her rather strangely named book, 10 Years to Save the West. This is basically her memoirs. It's basically about her. There's a little chapter in the end how she intends to save the West. But she's got an agenda to sell to an American audience as well, Henson. Now, I was trying just to ask her, looking back, whether she thinks, how many mistakes she believes that she made. She still basically thinks it was about communications and spin. And generally speaking, she thinks, look, the system doesn't work, so you had to move there and break things if anything was going to happen at all. Now, of course, I disagree with her, as do, I think, most people. But nonetheless, she explained what she was trying to do. Also, she confirmed that she didn't know, for example, that Kwasi Kwarteng was going to go on Sky News and announce tax cuts, one of the further destabilising things. And nor did she feel it was really possible to change the system. Now, of course, our system has always been frustrating to prime ministers. The methods of government have always been so bad as to bankrupt any private company. But those words have been true since John Buchan wrote them a century ago. Real prime ministers, successful prime ministers, managed to anticipate the system and make it work for them. She didn't, with calamitous results. But I think her failure is rich in lessons, and some that she spells out and some that the readers can deduce from themselves through the pages of her book.
Katie, 14 months ago, we got the first interview with Liz Truss after she left office. And I remember you saying at the time that, you know, you look at where she was choosing to make her interventions, interview The Spectator, your long essay in The Sunday Telegraph. Those were publications with a sort of conservative centre-right bent. And the idea being that she was focusing on the party and sort of hoping that her ideas long-term would have effect there. Sort of 14 months on from that, how do you think Liz Truss's standing is within the Conservative Party and her ideas trying to win over the wider movement?
I think she's now trying to sell books, and actually the bigger market is in the US, not the UK, and you can see it just from the publisher. So it's Biteback in the UK, whereas the US publisher, I think, is probably more significant in terms of what she's trying to do.
The same publisher as Steve Bannon's, apparently, the show one, which to some sort of suggests a kind of ideological arc, which has alarmed some friends of Liz Truss. They see her going over stateside talking about the deep state and they think, my God, what are you doing?
And didn't she call you the more popular Steve Bannon?
I couldn't quite work that out.
Do you think you're more popular than Steve Bannon?
It depends. Given that he's about as popular as Anthrax, I'd like to think so.
Well, we could do a tally in the office later. But no, I think you can see in terms of book sales and book markets going US. In terms of the UK, I mean, she's doing a broad range of interviews, Fraser's one being her first broadcast. I think that, does she have an influence within the Tory party? I was speaking to someone in cabinet about this, and they were effectively saying, you know, they would love it if everyone ignored Liz Truss's book and everything she had to say, and it got no coverage whatsoever, because Labour ultimately is very much enjoying the fact Liz Truss is back in the spotlight, and often is actually. But they said her experience still speaks to lots of people, and there is a part of conservative thinking that does think if a few things had gone differently, which is something Liz Truss talks about, would things have looked quite different? And actually, would you be in a path to growth rather than this, you know, managerialism that they will talk about in the current Tory thinking? So I think that Liz Truss still does have some influence in Tory circles. I think even her most ardent supporters don't believe that she is the right messenger. They think that her premiership and the terms that ended mean that she is too toxic to be the person who's pushing out front and centre and the main speaker, or a future leader of the opposition type thing. But I think in terms of her thinking and her analysis, I think there are plenty of Tories who will say she has a point on growth, we can't keep doing what we're doing here, the way she went about it didn't work, but there are lessons to learn from it. And therefore, you know, you will often hear about Liz Truss meeting with future Tory candidates, you will hear about the ideological battle repeatedly that comes after the election. And I think there you could start to see parts of Trussism perhaps live on, but without her as the main pusher of them.
She seems to be positioning herself now as a kind of Barry Goldwater of the British right, a kind of prophet who was laughed at the time but will be vindicated. But I think she's doing so by twisting some of the most basic facts of her own premiership. I mean, for example, she says that she basically was concerned about high immigration. If you speak to those around at the time, Number 10 was pushing back against Suella Braverman when she was attempting to push down immigration. So Liz Truss was still a liberal stroke libertarian when it came to immigration, very relaxed about it. She's trying to retrospectively say that she wasn't. Similarly, her mini budget, she says it was all about tax cuts. It wasn't. She wanted to borrow 40 billion quid to subsidise everybody, including billionaires, for heating their houses, swimming pools, whatever. It was an incredible borrow and spend agenda, the like of which Gordon Brown would have hesitated to do when he was in office. So she is, through this book, trying to reinvent the history of her premiership, positioning herself as being a sort of true blue conservative. When in fact, if you look at her own record in government, she was probably a quisling by her own sort of definition now. I mean, she paints a world of true believers and faint hearts, of real conservatives, which she is one, and fake conservatives, which is most other people. The subtext of her book is the only conservative in the room, the implication being that everybody else is a poser, a kind of faker. But in the book, though, of course, you ask her, why didn't you back Brexit then, if you were so true, so radical, so self-determination? And she says in the book, well, I wasn't confident enough, I just went with the flow, I did whatever my boss wanted to at the time. Now, that's understandable, but it's less understandable why she's so harsh now on those who she regards as less than 100%, given that she herself was never, including when she was Prime Minister, she was never as ideological as she now positions herself as being. And I think this book can be seen as an opening skirmish in the battle for what comes after the Tory defeat, because there will be radicals who are thinking we should have been far less compromising, we should be going far more for tax cuts, etc. And I think she has learnt the vocabulary of Thatcherism, but she spent like a drunken Keynesian when she was number 10.
Fraser, just before we go then, can you give us the highlights of the interviews just to entice people to spectator TV? I mean, Donald Trump, what does she say there?
She mentions him in the book almost as much as she mentions Office for Budget Responsibility. She thinks he'd be a good thing for America and the world, even though, of course, I try to put to her the tension between what she's saying about Ukraine, we need to completely stand by defence of freedom, etc., and Trump's position, which is far less so. But because I think she's positioning herself on the Trumpian right in America, she can't afford to criticise the Donald.
So we have a Truss endorsement for Trump. And then Lee Anderson, she misses him.
She does. She thinks he shouldn't have been kicked out of the Conservative Party. By the way, I mean, many other cabinet members think that was the case too, that Rishi induced a split in the Conservatives by kicking out Lee Anderson and saying to the Tory voters, you should be voting Reform if you agree with Lee Anderson. So she's not alone in thinking it was a mistake to kick him out, but she does. I mean, she was a member of the so-called Popular Conservatives. She launched it. Lee Anderson was there as one of her ideological soulmates. And it makes you wonder if the group that were in the Popular Conservatives now ought to be voting for Reform in the next election.
And abolish the Supreme Court, which is a former Lord Chancellor. It's quite a statement.
Yes, and I'm not entirely sure she's thought all of that through, really. Again, I disagree with so much of what she said. And I also think if you sliver some truth serum, even she would not say that she believes a lot of the stuff she's saying now. I don't mean to accuse her of being insincere, you know. But there is such a thing as successful conservative reform.
Yeah.
Thatcher did it. I've got this book on my shelf behind me, Just in Time by John Hoskins, that shows you these need to be years in the making. The Gove reforms in education were years in the making. The IDS reforms in welfare were years in the making. You can reform the system. Liz Truss, I'm afraid, will go down as one of these conservatives who says that government doesn't work and then got elected and proved it.
Thank you, Fraser. Thank you, Katie. And you can listen to the interview on Spectator's YouTube channel now.